Good morning and welcome to the State of the Association, a discussion about Iowa's future. This plenary session is about our association, the International Ombudsman Association, and how it supports the practice of its members and all organizational ombuds. Your Board of Directors will update you on the critical issues facing the association and open a dialogue about the way forward. Our meeting today has two parts. During the first part, three board members will summarize the issues the board has been wrestling with. Then during the second part, we want you to share your thoughts about these issues. You should anticipate a lively discussion in the second portion of the meeting, so I encourage you to pay attention during the first. We will start with a short presentation from three board members, Nick Deal, Anna Maurice Cousins-Price, and Donna Douglas-Williams. Then Nick and Doris Campos Infantino will lead us through a facilitated discussion for the second part of the meeting. As Doris and Nick will explain, the feedback from the group discussions will be important for the board's strategic planning process that begins later this year. Let me begin by giving some context to our remarks. For at least the past 5 years, as long as I have served on the Iowa Board of Directors, the board has grappled with issues of inclusivity, internationalism, financial stewardship, and how best to promote the organizational ombuds profession. Board members individually bring these concerns forward when they are elected, and we also hear from the membership about these issues frequently. Aware of these concerns, the board has actively sought dialogue with the membership on substantive issues. At the 2010 conference in New Orleans, we solicited feedback on the future of the association using the World Cafe process. And then subsequently, we conducted an online survey of all the members, whether they attended the conference or not. The responses to this query were somewhat ambiguous. Most respondents wanted our association to continue to focus primarily on the organizational ombuds profession, but a substantial minority also wanted Iowa to be more inclusive, especially for members that had less than perfect compliance with Iowa standards, or who practice in non-U.S. organizations and had a different culture about the role of the ombudsperson. In addition, many members raised concerns to the board about how our association could better accommodate these variations in practice. In response to this input, and in light of other factors, which we will highlight today, the board decided to suggest two changes to the bylaws at last year's annual business meeting. Both of the changes were intended to make Iowa a more inclusive association. The first proposal was seen as relatively innocuous and was intended to harmonize the mission statement with the bylaws. The updated statement said that the association's mission was to 1. Advance the organizational ombuds profession globally, 2. To support and develop ombudsman practitioners who serve organizations in a confidential, impartial, and independent role, and 3. To promote cooperation and professional exchange with other conflict resolution professionals. The second proposal was more significant and would have reduced the number of membership categories and separated membership status from standards of practice. The bylaw change would have simplified the membership categories to just 2, practitioner members and general members. The practitioner member category would have encompassed all individuals working in an ombuds role defined as someone designated as an impartial, confidential, and independent intermediary between an organization and some internal or external constituency. The general member category would have encompassed all other individuals who support the ombudsman profession, including administrative assistants in ombuds offices, and others with an interest in the field. To protect the standards of practice and code of ethics, the board also included a provision that any changes to our guiding principles would have required a 2/3 approval by the Board of Directors after the voting membership had been solicited for comment. The board intended these changes as a way to move us from that of a profession enforcing association, what some have called a regulatory model, to an association that provides guidance and resources, what some have called a guidance model. In hindsight, the members of the board all acknowledged that there was not enough communication to and from the membership about the proposal's objectives, the proposal itself, or opportunities for input from members before presenting such a proposal at the Portland business meeting. I don't know if this has been said before, But it should be said that the board's approach was not comprehensive enough, and the board takes responsibility for mistakes that were made in that process, and for that the membership deserves an apology. When the bylaws were presented, several members spoke up publicly at the meeting and expressed concern that the changes would erode the IOA standard of practice and potentially weaken the profession's legal status. In particular, many members expressed alarm about dropping the term informality as a defining characteristic for the practitioner category of membership and as an element of our mission statement. In case you weren't there, both proposals were rejected resoundingly by a vote of about 4-1. Nonetheless, the board heard that voters wanted to keep the board to keep working on these issues. And we also heard from many that the outcome reinforced the feeling of disenfranchisement that was felt by many associate members and members who practice outside the U.S. So the board returns to you today, after much more work, to continue this conversation. And I will start this conversation with some positive observations about our association and profession. And I'll focus on the strengths and opportunities that we all share as an association and profession. And I'll begin by acknowledging that this truly is an association of the members. Volunteer Ombuds organized IOA's predecessor organizations. They negotiated the current structure of the organization. They drafted and updated governing materials and professional standards, all as peer volunteers. And volunteers continue to run this association. Our colleagues have taken time from their professional work and personal lives to plan and execute our annual conference, to train aspiring and new ombuds, to write and edit a newsletter and professional journal, and partake in the many other activities that define IOA and advance our profession. We are especially fortunate that ombuds come from diverse backgrounds. IOA's volunteers are social workers, reporters, doctors, therapists, lobbyists, clergy members, etc., and we all benefit from this rich diversity. Although the second strength for us is a set of well-developed professional standards. Although we're a relatively young profession in comparison to many, IOA is built on a set of professional standards that have been refined over decades of practice. IOA's code of ethics and standards of practice are robust and widely followed. These professional standards provide the foundation of a certification program that has enrolled nearly 100 practitioners. We are also fortunate that many of the individuals who helped fashion our current standards still practice and offer leadership to our association. IOA has a robust training program, and this is based on our professional standards. Indeed, I would offer that we have an enviable training program. Our courses are taken by professional and prospective organizational ombuds, by ADR students, by conflict coaches and mediators, and by other types of ombuds as well. Doubtless, everyone here today has been trained by an IOA instructor, and a substantial number of you are instructors yourselves. Fortunately for IOA, revenues from our professional development offerings consistently and substantially exceed expenses, so this is an important financial asset for our association. Moreover, IOA is just now starting to offer online courses, which have become commonplace in many professions. The fourth strength for us is market penetration. It's important to acknowledge where organizational ombuds have gained a foothold. In other words, the positive aspects of our market representation. For example, we are now widespread at colleges and universities in North America. Organizational ombuds are now standard at UN-affiliated organizations and are a growing feature in U.S. federal agencies. Although there is relatively low acceptance at major corporations, nonprofits, and religious organizations, several private sector industry leaders have long-standing organizational ombuds programs. Finally, it bears noting that the long-term demand for organizational ombuds appears positive. Overall, alternative dispute resolution is a growth market. The field as a whole is demonstrating its benefits to policymakers, judges, business leaders, and consumers. And I believe this trend will certainly benefit the ombuds sector as well. Moreover, our profession is unlikely to be outsourced or replaced by technology. That concludes my remarks, and I will turn the podium over now to Nick Diehl, who will summarize the external challenges our association faces.
Hey, good morning, everybody. As we were thinking about, and as the board is working through thinking about the challenges facing IOA and facing the organizational ombudsman field, we started out in the broad sense, thinking about external issues that we face, and moving into kind of the financial issues that the organization faces, moving in closer by looking at leadership, and then finally looking at the purpose, our common purpose as an organization. So that's the way we're going to present this to you today, starting with that kind of broad view and then moving in. One thing I wanted to mention before I begin talking about the external environment and the financial is that Wayne Blair, who's the ombudsman at University of North Carolina, was actually planned to be here and has helped a lot with this presentation. He had a family emergency, a medical emergency this week. Thankfully, everything's okay. But he couldn't join us because of that, and he sends his regrets and his greetings as well. So let me touch on a few things briefly about the challenges to the external environment that we see IOA facing. First, the number of organizational ombudsman jobs is not growing as fast as the number of people who are interested in this work. And although we don't have any statistics of exactly those numbers, it's apparent from the job growth that we can see and also the people who come and seek training from IOA. Another challenge that we have is that the role itself and the understanding of the organizational ombudsman is limited. And again, it's very anecdotal, but it's something that needs to be spread and understood more broadly. And I think there are a couple of reasons for this. One is that it's, again, a relatively new field, new profession. And the other is that it's definitely a nuanced practice. It's not something that's easy to explain. And we talk about an elevator speech. It takes longer than the elevator speech usually to explain this work. Practitioners in our different organizations are not always viewed publicly. You know, there are other fields where it's much more of a high-profile role. Many of us are working behind the scenes, and it's not apparent outside of our organizations what we're doing and how we support the work. The next is that our economic environment has been very difficult over the past few years. I'll talk a little bit more about that when I talk about IOA finances. But we've seen that a number of offices have been closed, and we are guessing that in large part that's due to finances and reducing budgets. On the upside, it's probably about level because we also see growth in the number of offices too. So there's a certain amount of offset, but we're not seeing a large growth in the number of offices overall. Finally, IOA at this point, and based partially on resources that we have, does not assert much influence externally. And it's something, you know, we're working on and thinking about what role we can take and take a greater role in educating people about the work that we do. So I'll move on to economic trends that are impacting us. The cost of business is always going up, and that's something that we have to face. The revenue for IOA has actually decreased over the past few years, and I'll talk about that more specifically in a moment. Currently, we are in a deficit mode, where our revenues are not meeting our expenses. Thankfully for the association, over the past many years, with very conservative financial management, we've been able to put our surpluses away and have a reserve. And that's what's ensuring our financial stability at this point. But that's not a sustainable situation for us. With all that said, IOA is doing relatively well. If you look at other similarly sized associations, you'll find that we're doing very well compared to comparable organizations. So just a quick look at IOA revenue and expenses. and I do not have an MBA, but I love charts. I think this is pretty cool. But if you look at, you can see the revenue, and I understand that's the good part of this, is in the blue, and the expense is in the purple color. So you can see that, you know, going through 2008, our revenues were going up significantly. And then we've had a downward trend. Our expenses have actually remained fairly steady since 2008, but the drop in revenue has been an important factor for us. One of the reasons for that, and just one example, I mean, there are a number of different factors that contribute to our financial situation. One of them is interest that we had on a reserve. And I believe that it was in 2008, we were earning about $32,000 a year on our interest alone. This past year, it was more around $2,000. So there's a huge drop off in that, and you know there are other factors that play into this as well. And I'll be giving more detail on this tomorrow during the business meeting. So I've already mentioned a couple of these things. You know, we've had surpluses in the past that have been able to help us through this. We, as a finance committee, and I'm serving now as the assistant treasurer, the finance committee is working very hard to think about what expenses we can reduce and also how can we increase the revenue. In addition to looking at how we're using our current resources, to make sure that the way that we're spending money makes sense for the association in reaching our goals. And finally, we're working very closely with the committees who do the bulk of the work for IOA on how to plan their budgets to make sure that it's in alignment with the work that we need to accomplish. Finally, this is really a moment for IOA to think about how we can make a leap forward. So we're not continuously worrying about, you know, revenue and expenses and you know, not working in a deficit mode. But this is a time for us to think about, is there something we can do significantly different in this organization to change that and to make sure that we're on solid financial ground moving forward? So I'll turn it over to Anna Maurice for some thoughts on leadership.
I didn't think anybody could make jokes on the financial part, but Nick did pretty good there, didn't he? So I'll be talking about leadership. I don't pretend to be a leader of any kind, but there's just a few things that we took a look into the history of the association up to this point, and we just wanted to mention a few of the challenges. One of the things that is a great asset that IOA has is the body of volunteers that we have. We could not do what we do every year without you. We have, taking a look at the numbers, just to kind of get an idea of where we stood in terms of the volunteers, and we have approximately 500 members, a little bit over, and just under 100 volunteers. And these volunteers work really, really hard. Many of them volunteer for more than one committee and give up their time, as Tom mentioned earlier, just generously and without a second thought to it. The work that we hope the association can continue to do cannot be done without the help of every one of you. We each come to IOA with a set of expectations, I think. We each know or have different needs that we would like the association to meet. But in order to do that, we have to put in some great amount of talent and work, and it does cost money to do that. So in order to help us move forward, we've contracted with PMA. Some of you may be familiar with we keep talking about Dana and Tara. They're part of the association that provides some of the support services, everything that happens behind the scenes for the conference, for instance. We have a contract for 2012 that provided us with 1,700 hours of manpower. That's about 33 hours a week, which is not a whole lot. It's not quite the number of hours that a full-time employee would provide in an organization. However, PMA helps to provide mostly the staffing for the conference. They do a lot of that work in preparation for the conference and also support the professional development committee so that we can have trainings throughout the year so that you can continue to improve your skills as an ombuds. We have, like I mentioned, the volunteer spirit is really good with the association, but the engagement from the membership at large can be sometimes a little inconsistent with the needs that we have. And this is challenging for us as a board because we can't always gauge what the pulse of the organization really is. So just to give you some ideas, usually we see a significant spike in activity from the membership right around the conference. Everybody's excited, you're going to come see your buddies, you're going to hang out, you're going to have a good time, maybe not in Houston, but hopefully in Miami. And we get really chatty. After the conference, we're still kind of going, rolling with that vibe. I don't know how it's going to go again with the Houston vibe, but hopefully the conference will keep you hyped up enough to continue to be engaged for a few weeks, and that's how it goes most years. And then it drops off. Just as an example, we, before I mention that, usually what we do throughout the years, and you may get the emails requesting your assistance, whether it's a survey, we're asking for your feedback by email, and some respond, some don't. But most recently in 2010, we conducted the survey for the compensation to give an idea of what ombuds around the world are making. We have, or at that time had, there were 440 members that were eligible to participate in the survey. And we received 166 responses from those members. Similarly, for the elections last year, 490 of you were able to vote, and we only received 136 votes. So that means that we don't know a lot of what's going on in your heads. And then we move into the board itself. And I'm pretty new on the board. I'm not the newest kid on the block, but this is probably completing my first year. And it's been a really exciting activity, but I have been able to notice that there are certain things that make it difficult to kind of continue to move forward. One of those things is that when TOA, which is the Ombudsman Association, and UCOA, the University and College Ombuds Association, merged a few years back, forming IOA, the bylaws established that the board of directors would be set for staggered terms. Essentially, that means that every year, about a third of the board turns over. We have new people come in. And I can tell you from going into the board last year that it's a lot of learning how to walk, essentially. So imagine having to do that year after year. We spend a lot of time just reintroducing information to the new members, which is essential so that we can continue to do the work that we have to do. The same thing happens in committees, not as much because committees tend to have the same chairs for a number of years, but we need to. There's no real succession plan. When someone comes in, it would be great if we had an established path that they could follow without having to reinvent that wheel again. Those are just some of the things that I had to mention in regards to leadership. I'm going to pass it on to Donna, who's going to provide some of the history and the shared purpose that we have.
They assigned me the hardest one and they made me go last. They don't like me. These presentations this morning are devoted to topics that the board believed were current challenges to the organization. But this final one was such a challenge. It was even a challenge for board members to name or accurately frame this particular set of issues. Some of us believed this was really an issue about organizational identity, our name, how we represent ourselves as an organization, our mission and vision, how we are perceived within and outside the profession, And some believed it was a much larger issue of organizational culture, which included our collective behavior, our organizational values, our practices, how we interact with one another, our language and terminology. We decided to frame this challenge as a question about the shared purpose of IOA. The questions that might be explored in this regard are, do we have a shared purpose? If so, what is it? Is the purpose one we all understand and share as an organization? Does the language of our current mission and vision statements appropriately capture this shared purpose? These questions have come up frequently in board discussions, in conversations among members, and explored via membership surveys and in the World Cafe process during the 2010 conference. While we may not come to unanimous agreement about answers to the above questions, we did want to openly acknowledge and devote time for further dialogue on this topic, with the hopes of moving towards some sense of shared understanding around shared purpose. We are therefore presenting this in the context of one of the challenges facing the organization. Briefly, these are things that the board saw as related topics or issues around this concept of shared purpose. As most of you know, IOA came into existence in 2005 as the result of the merger of two distinct organizations. While both were organizational ombuds associations, one, the University and College Ombuds Association, was smaller with a more narrow focus and totally driven and managed by volunteers. The other, the Ombudsman Association, or TOA, was larger with a somewhat broader membership base that represented more diversity in the organizations where its members serve, that included corporations, government, nonprofits, as well as higher education ombuds, and it was managed with the assistance of a professional management company. Many also felt that there was some overlap in the membership, and many felt that there was a different culture to some extent of these predecessor organizations. And although there was some overlap in the membership of UCOA and TOA, there was a divergence of opinions about the merger. Some members were enthusiastically supportive of the merger, some were vehemently opposed to it, and some fell somewhere in the middle. Once merged into one, the corporate purpose, as articulated in the IOA Articles of Incorporation, was as follows. The corporation is organized exclusively for nonprofit purposes, more specifically in an effort to promote the common business and professional interests of ombudsman professionals and to enhance the quality and value of the organizational ombudsman function. The corporation shall serve practicing international ombudsmen and others using ombudsman skills in their work, advance understanding of the profession internationally, assist with the establishment of ombudsman offices in the private and public sectors, ensure the availability of effective training for ombudsman professionals, foster cooperation and exchange with other professional ombudsman organizations and professionals engaged in dispute resolution, and establish educational standards, standards of practice, and codes of ethics for ombudsman practitioners. This constituted our first expression of a shared organizational purpose. However, in the years that have followed, we acknowledge the challenge in seeking the best way of coming together from this history with a true sense of shared purpose. The second topic that seems appropriate to bring forward under this shared purpose umbrella is the name of the organization. In 2005, the name that was adopted for the organization was the International Ombudsman Association. This name, which for some remains controversial because of the desire to reflect a gender-neutral organizational identity, has also presented challenges to the quest for shared purpose. Most will acknowledge that IOA is viewed as a North American, or some will say U.S.-centric-oriented organization, and that the I in our name should be honored with a more committed effort to make IOA truly international. That we should be asking the questions, how do we better serve practitioners globally? Do we have a shared purpose around international aspirations? Do we have a shared global language, use global terminology, And does our strategic plan reflect intentions to become a truly international organization? Of course, the other issue around our name is whether the decision to omit organizational from the name was an intention to broaden IOA beyond the OO model, or if despite this omission, there is a clear shared purpose to focus primarily on the organizational ombuds model with a clear commitment to the current IOA standards of practice. In order to gather input from members about the issue of shared purpose, there were a few processes developed to solicit feedback. One was a World Cafe process in which members were invited to participate during the 2010 New Orleans conference. While the opinions gathered during this process were varied, they generally fell within three camps. The first were suggestions that IOA broaden to become an umbrella organization where different types of ombuds practice were welcome, where each would have their own SLPs developed. This would include classical, advocate, executive, consultant, and legislative, in addition to organizational ombuds. The second group expressed a clear preference for IOA continuing to focus on the organizational ombuds model, because they felt that the organization cannot be all things to all people. The third group of opinions expressed a preference for continued focus on the organizational ombuds model, but that the organization should be welcoming to other ombuds and conflict resolution professionals because engagement with those with diverse practice models was valuable. A follow-up electronic survey sent to the membership following the conference was to clarify members' opinion on IOA's future. When asked if IOA should focus on development and services to organizational ombuds, 64% of respondents indicated agreement or strong agreement to this question, where 22% disagreed or strongly disagreed. There seemed to be a very clear majority who expressed a preference for IOA's continued focus on the organizational ombuds model. When asked the question if IOA should expand to serve other types of ombudspersons, the respondents did not show such a clear majority. To this question, 42% of respondents indicated agreement or strong agreement to expansion to serve other types of ombudspersons, and 36% expressed disagreement or strong disagreement about such expansion. Based on this feedback, the board believed that the membership supported what we began to call an organizational ombuds plus vision for IOA, which would have been a proposed way forward for the organization, which acknowledged IOA's focus on organizational ombuds practice, but which included and included remaining committed to the SOPs, COEs, and continued rollout of the co-op certification, but would also promote an organizational environment welcoming of all professional ombuds practitioners in our training programs, conferences, and membership. And speaking of membership, the current membership categories are an outgrowth of the membership categories of IOA's predecessor organizations and are viewed in many ways as one of the strongest protectors of the standards of practice and code of ethics. However, there are some members have expressed that this division impacts the organizational culture and contend that many members who devote time, effort, and leadership to IOA are made to feel like second-class citizens because they do not qualify as full members. In some cases, these members cannot practice to the current standards of practice due to constraints by their own organization and/or due to their ombuds charters or terms of reference. While there remain varying opinions about this issue, it is mentioned here as we believe it remains a challenge to the issue of shared purpose in IOA. Since 2005, there have been varying versions of the IOA mission and vision statements adopted by the board in IOA strategic planning groups. The history and chronology of these are a bit complicated, and although some of the versions express similar language, there has not always been consistency in this language, even at a given moment of time. There's a subgroup of the board working on a process that solicits input from the membership about how IOA's mission and vision statement should be framed. All of you should have had at your tables or in your chairs a questionnaire for that purpose. So what we are asking of you as members is to give us feedback on what your thoughts are about the current vision and mission statement, whether we should explore revising them, whether they should stay the same, and any other input that you'd like to share as we move forward with this process. And one of the things that we are going to hope to do is start a dialogue over the listserv, online, and we'll also follow this hard copy with an electronic survey to the membership after the conference, because we believe this issue of mission and vision is really instrumental into the strategic planning process that we'll be entering later this year. The subgroup that's working on this is Indusen, Sarah Thacker, Patty Lynch, and myself. So we are hoping that you will give us any feedback that you have about IOA's mission and vision. I will mention that the IOA values adopted in 2009 are integrity, service, respect, and collaboration. In addition to these IOA values that serve as a unifying core, I'm sure that many of us will agree that we do have a shared purpose. Beyond these issues about our organizational identity and culture, it seems clear that we are all dedicated to the higher purpose of promoting equity and fairness, civility and respect in our respective workplaces, and also to come together as colleagues to share experiences, help, support, and learn from one another. As we move forward as an association in addressing this issue, along with the other challenges that have been presented here this morning, we look forward to continued input from all of you about the next steps forward. I'm now going to turn it over to Nick and Doris, who will lead us in further discussion regarding the state of the association.
Good morning. So now it's your turn. We'd like to spend the rest of this session engaging you in a discussion about whether this makes sense to you in the same way that it makes sense to us. We're actually going to spend a good 30 to 40 minutes in your table groups talking about whether these challenges are the same challenges you see, whether you see different challenges that we may not have on our radar, and if these are the challenges, what would you prioritize? Because essentially, we need your input in order to launch a strategic planning process that we're about to engage in. The current strategic plan ends this year, and we're going to spend this year as a board soliciting input, attempting to get our pulse on the field as well as on the membership's interest in order to develop and set the direction for IOA for the next 5 years, from 2013 to 2018. So, in your table groups, we're going to elicit your input about whether these are the challenges you see or if you see additional challenges. And then we're going to ask you to provide us with some ideas about how to address some of these challenges. So we'll be generating ideas for the second half of the discussion. This is not going to be your only opportunity for input. I know that each of the speakers actually mentioned that we're going to make special attempts this year to solicit input and engage the membership in discussion. Even during the conference, we'll have other opportunities for you to dialogue with the board. In fact, there's a cocktails with the board this afternoon where on an individual basis, we'd love to engage in conversation with you around your reflections, what you heard presented and what your tables groups discussed. Additionally, during the conference, we're going to collect, we'd like to collect ideas from you that you might want to present on in an individual manner. And questions as well. We'll have two bins out on the registration desk, one for questions you want the board to address, and one for ideas. So we'll have an ideas box and a question box. And that's what the index cards on your table are for. And Tom is demonstrating. They're big index cards that are in the middle of your table. Please take one So when a thought occurs to you or a question occurs to you, you'll write it down and drop it off in one of those boxes. What we'll do with the input that you provide today is to summarize it tonight to the best, in the best way we can, with that short, in that short time frame, and summarize it for you and report it back to you tomorrow afternoon at the annual business meeting. In addition, if there are questions that we can already address, we'll address them as a board and respond during the question and answer session at the annual business meeting. So, in your table groups, at each table there's a facilitator. Facilitators, can you please raise your hands? Okay. They may ask for help in recording. If you're at a table where there's not a facilitator, I know that there are some tables that have open seats. Please join your colleagues at another table so that you could have a richer discussion. They'll be recording your comments on flip chart, and then we'll ask them to the facilitators to identify the top five challenges that you identified in your table groups, as well as the top five ideas, so that we might select those. So, if you have any questions, please ask your facilitator, and without further ado, we look forward to hearing your ideas. Thank you.